That said, getting back to the Connecticut budget cuts and how those budget cuts could affect the disabled, I wanted to get on the program attorney Henry Weatherby from Bloomfield, founding principal of Weatherby and Associates PC, because his law firm deals with the disabled and deals with how, for example, during these uncertain economic times, particularly, the disabled could be affected. He's suffering a bit from a cold and sore throat, but he's game. He's going to bear it. And we welcome attorney Henry Weatherby to Front and Center. Henry, welcome to the program.
Well, Dan, thank you very much for having me on.
So from the standpoint of the Connecticut budget proposals and the budget cuts, how would they affect special needs children?
Well, the current budget proposals are going to take a little over $5 million out of the support system for the disabled. For instance, $3 million of it is going to take away from day services for adults and employment opportunities. It's going to severely curtail the opportunities for those children who have disability issues such that they need assistance. Right now we've got support even after 21. A whole lot of that's going to go away because of these changes. We're going to lose almost $2 million for funding adult group homes. That's going to mean that some people who currently have a roof over their head, an appropriate place to live, may well not have that any longer. And some of the in-home services for children that help, you know, make them be able to participate in school, et cetera. We got a $300,000 or so that's going to go away there.
Go ahead.
But that may not all happen, okay, because it's a proposal.
Right. But and right now, I know that there are several groups, obviously, that are fighting these proposals, but right now that is what is on the table, correct?
Yes, yes.
And we're also talking about jobs being affected here as well, because I'm guessing that there are people who could lose the jobs from the services that are being supplied, right?
Oh, absolutely. Group homes have to have people there to manage them, furnish necessary supervision. We don't know how many jobs are going to be lost, but there absolutely will be a lot of jobs that go away.
So that said, Attorney Weatherby, and we're talking with Henry Weatherby here on Front and Center, let's, for conversation's sake, presume that all or most of these cuts are going to take place. What happens next to the people who are affected?
Well, if the group home closes because there's not money, then there's not necessarily another place for them to go. You have the risk of ending up with far more homeless people. You'll have children who don't get the support they need to participate in school. You'll have people that are not getting the appropriate care and socialization that they need. It's a bad result for everybody. In most cases, the people that are receiving these services, there's not another alternative available to them.
So the people who are on the receiving end of these services that could be cut if these proposals were to go into effect, where do they turn? What do they do? Do they have any alternative?
Well, as individuals, generally not. There's opportunities for families to do planning in advance so that if the trend, which has been going on for, 40 years now, to continually restrict and limit the availability of support for people with disabilities, if it continues, then every family who has any concern about this needs to take advantage of the planning that the law allows them to do. One of the tools that we see used a whole lot is a special needs trust. They come in several different forms, but to the extent that we can set money aside into a special needs trust, then that money will be available to supplement whatever benefits are available, but will not be able to be taken by creditors or other predators that frequently prey on the disabled.
And that's a very interesting comment, and we'll explore that in a minute. But it would seem to me, Henry, that we're looking at a budget deficit now, which is leading to these cuts, and it's predicted that the next budget could be in deficit by $1 billion. It would seem to me almost essential that people who are currently on the receiving end are going to have to do more planning, right?
Well, absolutely, if they have anything to plan with. What the thing is that all too many of these people don't have anything. If you look at the, for instance, for an individual to qualify for Medicaid support, they can't have more than $1,600 in total assets. If for someone who receives SSI, that's Supplemental Security Income, they can't have more than $2,000 in assets. There's not a hell of a lot of planning. Excuse me. There's not much planning that you can do when you're limited to so few, such a small amount in the way of assets.
That was going to be my next question. I mean, a lot of these people who are faced with this situation don't have assets to begin with, so they're really in a bind, aren't they?
Well, it's worse than a bind. It's between a, it's the proverbial rock and a hard place. If you don't have anything, if society is not going to help support you and give you some kind of a reasonable place to live, et cetera, you're going to end up with more and more people homeless. You know, I'm not into statistics, but I know that our rate of homelessness has continued to increase for several decades now. And it's because there's really no place else for these people to go.
And then you got the other side of the coin with people who are struggling to make ends meet, but they somehow are making ends meet, but they're saying that their taxes are going up in order to meet this budget deficit. And what do they do?
Well, I don't know what the answer is, because I'm going to tell you, I've never run for public office. I'm not a politician. But there certainly has to be some adjustments, because I've been around for a long time, and I know we did in the 70s and early 80s, we did a much better job of taking care of the disabled than we do today.
That was going to be my next question. Have you ever seen it this bad?
Not really, no.
Hmm. Let's talk about some of the programs you mentioned before, day services. What kind of day services are we talking about?
Well, adult daycare is, and there are a number of, I don't know how many in the state, but there are a lot of services where someone who has disabilities, they may be employment-related programs with ARC or one of the different charities that work in this area that give them a place to go and something to do during the day. And a family or a group home is going to take care, furnish them a place to be at the end of the day. Many of these folks that participate in there, other than their ability to participate in these programs, they're not going to be employable, and they'll not be able to generate any income. And you've got a very bad trend line going on. I don't know. I've not personally been to India and these other countries, some of these other countries, but we are on a long-term trend to end up having our streets look like they do in Bombay or any some of these other third world countries.
You're saying it could get that bad?
Yes, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's probably not going to happen in 5 years. But if you look over the multi-decade trend running back in the 70s, that's the trend that we're on. And that's a political decision.
So let's say these services are cut back this year, and the people that you talk about, at least who had some kind of job, they're going to lose their jobs. Do they have a home to go to, or are they going to be thrown out on the streets?
Well, if they're if they're managing to maintain an apartment or something on their own, they may be able to still have that. But if you have people in group homes, and if the group homes close because of this, then where are they going to go? Oftentimes, there really isn't any other place.
What about the nonprofit sector? Can they step up? Do they have the resources to handle this?
Well, the nonprofits do the very best they can already. How much more can we expect them to do? You've got tax law changes that have made charitable contributions less attractive than they used to be. Many people are giving less than they were. So the funding has to come from somewhere. There are a lot of volunteers, but volunteers, they only go just so far.
You were talking early before, and we're chatting with attorney Henry Weatherby, founding principal of Weatherby & Associates, PC. He's been dealing with this for years. And, what's going to happen if these budget cuts go through? Define special needs children.
Well, someone with special needs, essentially it boils down to they have a cognitive or physical impairment such that they're not able to fully function in society. From Social Security's definition, someone that would have special needs, if they're unable to perform any gainful occupation in the national economy. That's a pretty stringent definition, because if you can do anything that's gainful, that furnish gainful employment, you're not going to qualify for instance, SSI, which is Supplemental Security Income, and that's only just over $700 a month. So it doesn't matter, again, whether that disability is cognitive or physical, but there are tons of people that are affected by this. When it comes to Social Security disability, the standard's the same, but the benefits are more because you will have worked long enough to qualify for that particular benefit. So that's more likely somebody who's had an injury or has developed a cognitive problem later than life and as opposed to childhood.
Do we know the numbers in Connecticut? How many people are listed as special needs?
Actually, Dan, I don't have that. I don't know that information.
But I think it's fair to say it's in the thousands, isn't it?
That's what I understand, yes. We're not talking a few hundred people.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody has, I don't even want to use the word nest egg, but if they have some kind of money, how should they be developing a blueprint to prepare for the day when some of these programs could come to an end?
Well, what we want to do is, remember I mentioned earlier special needs trusts. If you've got parents who want to provide for a child, and you've got to remember, a child is not necessarily 5-6 years old. A child might be 50 or 60 years old. The parents have managed it. They've done the best they can to take care of them. But you never want to leave that individual money outright, because that will, to the extent these programs are still available, that will disqualify them in almost every circumstance for any of those benefits, be it Medicaid or SSI or whatever. We want to create what's called a third-party special needs trust. And all that means is somebody other than the disabled individual created this trust using their funds for the benefit of the child. Now, the advantage of a third-party special needs trust is the assets can be there. They can be used to supplement but not replace whatever benefits might be available. So we leave the individual with some opportunity to get some support, whether it is, for instance, just health care, or to continue to get their $700-plus from SSI. If for some reason an individual comes into money, whether it's, say, through a lawsuit or, say, a personal injury suit or they inherit money, it is possible to create something called a first-party special needs trust. And what that means is that trust was created using the funds of the disabled individual. But that trust generally is best created through the order of a court. It's got to be irrevocable, which there's substantial limitations on any ability to make any changes. What's there can only be used for the benefit of the individual. It's got to be done before they're 65. And any funds that are left in that trust at the passing of that individual must first go to reimburse the state for any funds spent to assist that individual. When we have those situations, sometimes that's a way we can have somebody live just a little bit better than they might otherwise on $700 a month.
And I was just thinking, how can anybody live on $700 a month, attorney?
Well, Dan, you and I couldn't do that, could we?
No, we could not.
You can't fathom how it's possible. So what that says is they've got an incredibly low benefit, and without some kind of additional resources or help, you really can't live. I mean, we can talk about poverty, but that's so far below the poverty line that it is unbelievable.
What about Medicaid? You talked about it before, but what's the threshold in order to qualify for Medicaid?
Well, for a single individual, they can have in assets $1,600.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have income, but if we're talking in Medicaid comes in several forms, and with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, they made a number of changes. But if you don't have any income, or if you're on SSI, that level, then you will get health care through the Affordable Care Act without having to pay any premium. If you have Social Security disability, so that you're receiving more money, in general you're still going to qualify for Medicaid, but you may simply have Medicare, or there's a program out there that's called Quimby. It's qualified Medicare beneficiary, where we don't even have to pay the Part B premiums or pay for supplements, and Quimby will cover the copays and deductibles that you might otherwise incur if you had Medicare. And this is a whole lot to try and cover on the phone, because the benefit structures that are out there, there are many of them, but they're incredibly complex. They're overlapping rules, and most people find it very difficult to find their way through it. And oftentimes miss things that they should otherwise be entitled to, or they do things inadvertently that cause them to be, you know, disqualified.
And, you know, that's another thing, too. You mentioned Medicare. There's the notion out there among some people, they turn 65, all right, I'm covered, I've got Medicare, I'm all set. Not understanding, as you mentioned, there's Part B, there's supplements, so you still have to pay for some kind of coverage, right?
Well, absolutely. Medicare Part B, you know, the premium, it just went up. Used to be 104, I think it's 121 now. But that doesn't cover everything. There you've got Part A, which covers hospitalization, but you end up with deductibles there. You've got the copay and deductibles on Medicare that most people, to be able to afford care, need to either get a supplement to Medicare, or they need to do a Medicare Advantage plan that is really done through a private insurer, such as Connecticut or some of the other carriers that offer that here in Connecticut. I think there's six or seven of them. Because most people, if they have a major illness, can't afford the copays or deductibles. Something like 50% of all the bankruptcies in this country come from people being unable to pay for what was very necessary medical care. And that happens to Medicare beneficiaries just like it does from folks with other insurance.
So, I mean, we were led to believe that Obamacare would end some of this, but it seems to me that maybe it hasn't. What would you say?
Well, it has substantially improved the situation. We, you know, but it has not solved it. Now, from my perspective, Obamacare has nothing to do with care. It has to do with insurance. Okay, insurance isn't care. We have a very complex health insurance system in this country that most people don't understand. I mean, have you ever read your own health insurance policy to see what they actually cover?
My head starts spinning when I do.
Okay. And it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem because the older you get, the worse it becomes to try and sort your way through it.
Henry, we're about running out of time, but could you give us the website? Your website.
Our website is www.weatherby-associates.com.
Okay, Henry, have to break for news. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Well, thank you very much. You take care.
You too.